Well, hello there. This is Jim the Keys bartender. I know I haven't done that many shows in the last 2 weeks. I mean, one at a time. But as I said on a previous episode, we my coworkers and the owners opened up a new restaurant, and we spent the last couple of weeks going through procedures, menu items, serving procedures, styles, and all those things, and handling the opening. The opening, grand opening was last week, and it was taxing. It was physically and mentally taxing. I know a lot of you who just haven't been in the service industry, as I'm not saying it takes more than other people, but in a I guess it runs a gamut in the service industry. You have people, some very, very intelligent people work in the service industry, and it runs the gamut, meaning goes down to the people that are not so intelligent, but all of them are skilled in some way to be able to do the job. And learning new techniques and technology, how new places go together, how you serve people, how you collect payment at the end, using technology that is newer to most of the employees, let's say. It's trying. It is trying. And there's a lot of hours open a week. So I was, I was th normally at a job when you get, as in bartending, or like, I want to try to say something that's repetitive and not repetitive, because you're doing different things, but you do them multiple times. There's things you make as a bartender. It's like oil changes for mechanics, oil changes in a let's say a 2018 Corolla is pretty much the same each time when they do it. Right. So when you're making drinks and stuff, once you're doing something frequently, you master it. And it takes, I don't know if it's 10,000 acts or 10,000 hours to master anything. Now, I don't think, I think that means like playing the piano, or perhaps playing the guitar, or anything. It to master an instrument or a real skill, it does. And it's in a lot of ways it does when you talk about a whole occupation, bartending. But you could take a bartender who's really good. They really work in their denizen, their environment, the environment they're in. Right? They're what they're most comfortable doing. If you're used to working in a, corner bar with a corner bar crowd, that's, that's a certain vibe, certain style. And if you're behind the bar, you know where everything is, you know where your beer is, you don't really have to look. Once you work someplace for a while, now, you just get used to, doing your thing. And you come upon the situations are all things that you remember to say, oh yes, when I have to make a Tom Collins, I and I make it from scratch or whatever, you're mixing up the sour mix while you're serving it with lemon juice and egg white, the white part of the egg whites. Right? Once you do that, after doing something for me at least like 100 times, you kind of start forgetting about individual motions, and you're thinking about the whole breadth of the task. That's where we're trying to get to right now. But at the end of the week, I get so taxed. I really did. And a lot, I guess a lot of it is because I am older. I still feel as if when I went and taught my spin class today, I had a very long weekend. A long weekend for me, starting, I guess it was troubling. I try to compare myself to, younger people, and then you hear people they're going to work maybe 13, 14 hours, working a double today. You know, and they're doing it. And I remember doing those things, going in at 10 and leaving at 12, doing them back to back. I don't think I can really handle it anymore. When I get a 10 and 11, I feel I may look as if I can, but physically it's I don't know if I have to change the way I eat, the way I take my calories in, how I rest. If I start getting a deficit in sleep, I really feel fatigued and worn out and not mentally up. But I did weather it. I did weather it. Sunday, this yesterday was my last day, and that, you know, and there was a couple, there were three days that were all over 10 hours. One was 12 hours. So that's just a lot it's weird. It's a lot for me. And I still teach my spin, and I try to do my notary stuff. But once I miss a couple hours sleep, I really feel it. I really feel it. So I'm really now, I am really understanding the importance of sleep. But that being said, when you're doing it, I made it through it. I have today to recoup. I went and taught my class at spin, did a little workout there. And then I just was relaxing around the house thinking about doing this podcast. I think how important it is to me to do this because it's the way I sort my ideas. I mean, you have to really consider that. When things are really tough for me, when I find a job challenging, which I want a challenging position for something I do. I made myself into I could I if I wanted to be a history teacher, I could have been a history teacher. I chose something that I'm not a natural for. I'm a natural for a history teacher. I am skilled. I'm skilled at history. I am not a physical motions kind of skilled position job guy. No, there was never a time you know, I'm pretty competitive in tennis. For my skill level, I was an aggressive skier, a competent bicyclist, weight training. But other skill positions, I wasn't a great football player. I played some football, baseball, forget about it. My eye hand coordination is just shit. But I went to a position in the beginning that I was one of the clumsiest guys. I still could, I don't know, I still can be considered a clumsy guy. I was known as a child for my falling. I was doing Gerald Ford impersonations before Gerald Ford was. I'm talking 5, 6 years old. I mean, maybe Gerald Ford was falling when he was younger, but when he was president, he was falling down all the time. And it wasn't for just, I wasn't Gerald Ford was, he was an athlete and stuff like that. He may have had middle ear damage or something like that. He wasn't falling down because he was an older man at the time, but he was relatively fit. I don't expect him to be falling down, but I was like that. I was like that. And what would someone, whenever I, you know, when before college, when I was in high school and I took a catering job, I said, I was the last person. I was terrified of holding a tray and picking up glasses with a tray because I was not skilled or steady. I was strong enough to do jobs. These guys, big, tall guys my size were picking up trays and kind of suavely moving through, you know, with, you know, 10, 12 dinners on it, on these heavy stoneware plates and running them out, putting them up on their shoulder. I wasn't gifted that way, but I did it. I did it. I did the thing where for a while I did the up to the shoulder thing. Thank God I didn't do the up to the shoulder thing because all the guys that did it really well, they seem to have bad shoulders now. I kind of carried it the wrong way. I carried it the wrong way, but the most efficient way. I am, like I said, you see that? I'm not an elegant person. I could be, I don't know. I mean, there could be moments. I could have moments of being suave. I think I've been told that. I've had moments. I think there has to be the right mix of tired and I don't care. So, bartending, high volume bartending, using the flair kind of bartending has always eluded me. And sometimes, I just needed to do the regular stuff. Being able to open a bottle of wine without looking as if I'm going to break it in half. That's an important one. And I maybe shake a drink in me. I could look, maybe I'm having a seizure. Shaking a drink, when you're shaking a drink, you're supposed to really just shake your arms. If you imagine that, someone's not, their head's not shaking while they're doing it. You don't want to look like you're having a seizure. And I think I do that. And I have this awkward way. And sometimes I don't close the cups long enough. There's certain tech things with technique and style that just elude me, but I keep on doing it. I keep on doing it for some reason. I want to, I'm, I pursue, I'm pers I pursue excellence. Yet I'm so far off from it. But I don't think you should stop pursuing excellence just because you're not near it. Why not try? And that's the thing. And that's the thing about opening up a restaurant. You're starting at a really a lot of positions, especially when there's not a system you had before, like a Ruth Chris Steakhouse, right? If you're not familiar, Smith and Walensky. These are high-end steak restaurants that are a chain. High-end, high-end. Okay, if you're not familiar with them. Well, they have several, more than several locations. So they have a management team. They got a training team. They have everyone. They have procedures. And they have procedures for different, I'm assuming they have procedures for different locales. So they almost have an expectation, they because it costs millions and millions of dollars to open up one of these restaurants. It's a huge, huge investment. They invest a lot of research to find out the area and what, if the people are going to be able to, afford their fare. And then they train the people and they say, well, this is what you do. This is a book. Here's a booklet, everything we do and how we handle it. How we put our desserts, how we put out salads, what spoons, what's a fork, spoon, and knife situation for the layout on the table, everything to the moment. But when you open up a new restaurant for a place, but for us, it's an existing facility that has another facility. So there's two brewery bars, right? They have two of them, kind of like a chain. So they got a core team, but they're still relatively new because the restaurant we're opening is a high-end cocktail bar. It's a cocktail bar. It's not a martini bar, even though they serve martinis. It's a cocktail bar that has an excellent, excellent artesian pizza and salads and, appetizer fare. So it's perfect for the vibe. They were looking for a place like that doing it. There's actually, they open up within a mile of another place. It does similar things, but it's a different layout. So they're learning their own procedures. We're fine-tuning it just like I try to work and fine-tune my bartending. And I've always gotten to points when I was bartending that I thought, well, I'm doing all right now. I don't really need to learn anything else. I pretty much have 90% of the job down. After all those years, only 90%, which is good because they'll never be, maybe I won't, maybe I don't even have 90%. Maybe I'll never make it to 100%. But as I said, you pursue excellence, and that's what we do when we're opening. That's what I do when I'm bartending. Even though I didn't have the skill for it, or agility, for some reason I became a more than competent bartender. That's the way I would characterize it. I'm a more than competent bartender. I didn't say there's excellent because I work with excellent bartenders. And don't be afraid of that. Being more than competent is great, and always pursuing excellence will just make you, I don't know. I don't know if it keeps you young. It gives you, and it drives me forward every week. So that's my first half of the show. I'll be right back. Oh, I got big news too. I gotta share. I'll be back in a moment. Yeah, I made the mistake, I guess, in the last segment to say, oh, I'll be back. And that's what happened yesterday. I went into work and I'm bartending. And at the, excuse me, I'm gonna sneeze. Oh, gosh. I just took the dog out and the dog just peed. And I had to raise my voice to a high voice and say, and I called him by the wrong name. I keep on forgetting to call him Apollo. I'm calling him by the dog we used to babysit, and I don't know why, but I digress, right? I'm talking about yesterday. I go into work. This is the way I am. Usually when I go into work and I'm wide awake and I'm ready to go. My mind is racing different ways. I'm thinking about different things. I may be, if I'm watching the news, I'm thinking about the international situation. I'm thinking about the fluctuations in the currency between the Polish zloty and the U.S. dollar, and the plane fares, and this, and how much time I'll be able to take up from school. I mean, school from work. And I still want to take care of the bills and everything, but have a good time while I'm over in Poland. And besides that, I got to think about any health situations that are going in my family. My youngest sister is going through a health crisis, and then obviously in the whole match is always my wife and daughter is always at the top of it. But I'm talking about yesterday, and then I'm thinking, oh, I got to get the headliner fixed on my car. I'm going to go and do that. I'm made a booking for that. So all these things going on. But when I start getting tired of the opening a restaurant, I get very limited options. I get, besides being physically tired, I'm mentally tired that my mind isn't very dexterous. And when I'm doing it is I'm taking orders. We had a little hiccup at work. We took care of it. The people I work with are very professional. They do a very good job. They get it done. Gets a little tight. Gets a little tight, but the wheels don't grind to a halt, and you may get stuck in muddy waters and come pulling out of it, right? So I'm up there doing it. And people are ordering food, and I'm getting. You have a procedure for ordering food where they're going to text them by their phone number, and then we put in a number for them other than their phone number, so they can pick up their order quicker. And I would concentrate on that, and I'm so tired, and I'm not thinking. I think all the way, and they order their food, and I don't take their food order. They talk about their food, and I don't. I did it twice. I did it twice. And in all my years previously, and all my years previously for that, I may have done it once. And yesterday I done it twice, and it was recognized by some of them. And they were very nice to me about it. People were very nice to me. They saw that I was kind of tired and that was at work. I was kind of fatigued. And towards the end of it, I don't know if it's just the lack of sleep and the strain. Or because I restrict my calories, I don't eat at work. I think since I stopped eating at work, maybe it's my way my body handles being hungry. It changes my mood. I've been trying to do some kind of like the the protein shakes, the protein ones they do, not the Ensure, which is probably pretty good, but I need a certain amount of calories. I'm not trying to lose weight. I'm trying to make up for not eating. But I don't want to eat a bunch of carbs or I get all sleepy. So I always do. And I was doing that yesterday. I was dropping them. That was the two things that were most it's, and then also there was something maybe I was doing with the processing of credit cards that would stop the systems being connected, the cross the credit card processing modules weren't talking to the register, and that was. I'm going, boy, and people coming up and say, "Jim, you're breaking everything." I said, "Just because I'm tired, and I part of it is I don't know if I'm tired because I should be generally tired because I work at the hospital and do my the notary thing and try to do this, and we're raising, the pet, and I, I have a family. A lot of the other people, almost all the people I work with are single or just in relationships with some people without children." And or the children aren't home. I'm just feeling it. I was feeling it so much, being tired and out of sorts. And but it felt pretty good. I have to say, at the end of the day, I felt pretty good. It was even though the brain wasn't working. Sometimes, if I could just when I realized I dropped this important steps. Like in a process of ordering food, not putting the food, recording the food down and sending it to the kitchen, which is a critical part of the process. Other than that, I think I did everything. I mean, if I got a little more fatigued, maybe I wouldn't even recognize the things that I didn't do because some the first time it happened, I just said, "No, that's impossible." I sent it and then I open it up and I go, "I did not put the food down. I put everything else in." And there's just people are looking at me like, well, he this guy is definitely below average. He's not the sharpest bowling ball. It was about as sharp as a bowling ball. There you go. And I'm all right with that assessment. I was all right with the assessment that I wasn't the I was about as sharp as a bowling ball, and everything was going over my head. I got a hole in my glove. Everything's going over your head. That was, they're all from cuts from the famous Foghorn Leghorn, the big rooster in Warner Brothers cartoons. So yeah, I'm probably probably just going to do this episode for the week, but since I made it extra long, maybe I'll just do one extra long one instead of doing two, and then break it up in segments and just. Every segment is an idea and do it. And if we ever want to do an interview, we just do another, we do like 10, 15 minute interview. If I could do a 10, 15 minute interview, who should I interview? I wish I had interviewed the person that worked at the counter at the Lover's Boutique. You know, if I was single, I would have and interviewed all the dancers. Then I would do part of my thing. I said, I know what I'm going to do. I'm going to interview all the dancers at the gentlemen's clubs. Them. Yeah, every segment. It's misogynistic. I know it's misogynistic, but I think they would allow. I mean, and I would just say, if I was doing the show. And if it's only working single, because I said that's the way to do it. I mean, I guess I'm at 60. I better do well in the show because the show is unpopular. Then I'm just be a sad 60-year-old guy doing a small podcast that's interviewing. I know I could have done the podcast when I was in my when I was 53, still a little old, right? Now, I mean, if I'm talking to an older dancer, then it would be different. Let's say a dancer in their early 30s, who'd be 20 years older, not as creepy. But what I'm saying is, I would make the statement, the only reason I'm interviewing them is because I like talking to them because I find them very attractive. And just leave it at that. And then ask them questions, ask them nothing to do with the adult entertainment industry. And the dancing and all that stuff. And just ask them every question other than that. Do you have a pet? Do you like plants? Did you dance when you were younger? You know? That would probably be a really popular show. You just go around. I bet there is one where you just say, I run the most popular podcast network where he talks to just strippers all the time. No, but you get, do the show. First of all, you get to talk to them and you get to show them that they're regular people, and this way guys can't treat them as objects. Huh. I think I just started taking an idea that was pretty bad. And every so often you end up going on a date with one of them. Well, and they kind of understand it. They would kind of understand it. They said, well, he likes talking, he likes interviewing dancers. I don't know if stripper would be the right way. And ever so often I could just talk to a male dancer. That would really broaden my audience too. But yeah, none of it would be about stripping. Oh no, we wouldn't have to talk about sex. Because then they say, you know, there's a show. Yeah, okay, now I know how to pitch it. There's a show, a podcast that I like that this guy interviews all strippers, sex workers, prostitutes, masseuses, escorts, male, female, and stuff like that. And he never talks about sex or their job. You just talk about their pastimes. Why? Why would he do it? And I would say, you know, it's to humanize the people. So, you know, some think of them as their only thing as sex work. I guess this is what the podcast does for me. Because, you know, if you're an avid listener, you found out that I'm just not interested in podcasting. I get all not, I mean, I guess with growing older and stuff like that, I wish I was reading more. I really do. Because I definitely think my IQ slipped a couple points in the recent years. But we'll see. I'm going to keep on doing it. I'm definitely ending it the show today. I don't know if I'm going to be able to do another show the rest of the week, but stay tuned. Thank you. Have a great day. Yes, I am back. The big news is that several weeks ago, and I guess that was 2 weeks ago, my wife left on a Saturday with her sister. You know what? I'm probably repeating this, but I'm going to tell them. The big news is that we got a dog. I'm going to show pictures of it. And I probably said it on a previous episode because sometimes I'm yapping so much, I don't go into much detail on what happened. So the wife was in contact with someone, and they heard about this dog, and it was a puppy. It's a poodle, golden retriever mix of some sort, but he's tiny now. But he's only like 10 weeks old. It was 8 weeks old when she got him. And his name is Apollo. He's black with little, I got white under his chin, little bit of white on his chin, and little bit of white on two of his paws. And I mean, it's a puppy. He's a puppy, right? What are you going to say about a puppy? I mean, there's big news now with that the governor of South Dakota writing in a book the thing she did to her puppy that she hated. I mean, I never hated. I've been bitten. I got bit what? Last month? The beginning of last month? Was it? Yeah, beginning of last month when I went for a notary signing and somebody's dog ran up and bit me in the belly. Belly, man, if I had a washboard belly, that dog wouldn't. I mean, I don't have much of a belly. I don't have a pot belly. I don't. I mean, my chest still sticks out more. I'm sitting down. I'm not sucking my gut. The belly's probably could be a straight line. I'm looking in the mirror. Could be a straight line from the nipple down to the belly. Which it should be slightly concave there. Look, the chest. Yeah, the chest should be out. But I'm still almost there. Pretty good for 60. Pretty good for 60. But the dog still found enough a little fat on that bottom of the belly, right below the right on the right side of my belly button. Got in there, just got me, bit me, right? And that was the third time I got bit by really bit from a dog and got blood, right? And luckily, I think the month before I had a tetanus shot, so I'm pretty good, I mean, then luckily the dog wasn't rabid. But I'm saying I could actually end up being angry at, I wasn't angry at the dog. I wouldn't want it to report the dog. And there's no way someone could find out about it because just because I'm talking about the show, there's, I mean, they could, if you did a deep research investigation, maybe I should keep my mouth shut. They could find the dog, and but I don't think they're that, what do you call it? They're not that single-minded about finding dogs that are violent. But here I go. The wife says she's going to get a puppy. That's a commitment, not just, that's not a commitment just for me. I mean, for her, that's a commitment for me and a little commitment for the daughter, but she's not, 6 years old anymore and wasn't with, the dog we had previously that passed away 2 years ago. She slept with her, but now she loves puppies, but she's not going to, she's a 17-year-old girl. She's not really going to get attached to a dog right now, I don't think so. But I do. You bring any dog in a house or cat or a pet. I just think that's a responsibility when you get it. When you get something, you assume the care and well-being of a creature or a plant. I hated that with a plant because you can't ever get any information on a plant or a baby. At baby. When I got was married back in the early 2000s, it was prior to being, I think it was prior to being married or right after we got married. My ex-wife's friend ended up having a she was married and had at least one child, baby. Remember her, nice looking woman. I shouldn't say that, but she was a nice looking woman. And she goes to my, it was fiance at the time. She says, ex-wife, can Jim watch the baby? The baby was like 8 months old. 8 months old. And I had around babies, this is where, when was around babies? I've been around other people's babies. My friends started having babies a couple of years before. So this was more than a couple of years before. I was 37. I have seen babies. I changed maybe a diaper once or twice. I think my friend, I ch helped change my friend when he had, his wife had a baby, his girlfriend at the time had a baby. I changed a diaper or two there, maybe for my nieces. But I had very limited, it was definitely a for baby thing, maybe no more than 5 minutes. 5 minutes, that's the length of security people had with the feeling saying, would you leave baby with Jim? Yeah, but for about 5 minutes. I think that could be long in case to think that I was, quite the drinker. 5 minutes, I would just say, yeah, you can leave him with Jim and maybe for 5 seconds. You can run and look out the window and make sure the house is not on fire. But when the ex-wife's friend said, can Jim's home, can watch from the time I go to work until the time I get home? And I did it for 2 days. And I had to get all my instructions in about 5 minutes before. I don't know what said, like I could have just said, yeah, I was going to go and do something. Yeah, I don't know what made me agree that I was going to go and take care of someone's baby. I think maybe my little sister, when she was even 15 or 16, I wasn't really, I didn't really get, gosh, maybe a couple minutes was the time until she was like three. But it, you know, if you're under a year old at that time, that was kind of crazy. But once, you know, once I'm caring for something like that, something that a baby, a puppy, any newborn, anything that shouldn't be independent, and even independent people you feel empathy for. There's a show on Netflix called Baby Deer, and it's about a guy that ends up getting a stalker, just a regular guy, right? And it's a real story. But he just looks at somebody. You know how you are, who you are out there. Sometimes when you're feeling most, what would you call it, magnanimous of soul, and you look around, you're feeling pretty good, right? Or moderate. And you look at someone and you go, and you feel distinct disease or unease going on, not diseased. Unease, fear, self-hating, sadness, you know, depression. You feel it. You feel it sometimes. You look around. That's when you're walking down the street in a city and you just see misery. You see misery. See the mentally ill, you see homeless, you see angry people and stuff like that. And it's all surrounded by you. And that's, so when you run into a puppy, right, or something that you're in charge of, and you're like that person that feels misery, you don't want to make anything unhappy. You may say it's people pleasing or person pleasing or thing pleasing. What do you ever want to call it? You know, you want to be loved. No, I mean, I just care for the animal and stuff like that. The guy starts peeing this dog Apollo we have. He just pees and poops wherever he wants, and you just try to stop him. And you say, "Well, this is what you should do. You can't put him in the trainer yet, but when he do, you take him out. You say, you change your voice, you make it high." My sister says, "You know, you make sure he goes and pees and poops. Make a big deal about it. Give him a treat. Give him a treat when he does it." But he's not paying attention. He doesn't recognize the name Apollo. Poop and pee. He thinks he's like rip, yip. Like the dog yipping. I'm not going to get pissed off that this baby animal. Now, if you expect, if you yell at a dog for doing something and have a conversation, say, "Why do you do that?" Blah, 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 blah. Okay. Dogs are smart. I know dogs are smart. People are smart in different ways. I got it. But the dog really doesn't understand what it's you're saying. The dog doesn't have or remember. You tell the dog and say, "Listen, when you do me a favor, when the kids come home, don't bite them or don't bark at them." You know, that is it. And then dogs would be just be crazy. I guess 50% of the dogs are crazy. They'll just bark at everyone, right? This little dog doesn't like certain sounds. A motorcycle goes by. He does not like motorcycles. He doesn't like the sound of us wheeling our empty trash can. It frightens him. And he came from a good experience. This dog was an unplanned pregnancy. An unplanned pregnancy. These people had one, two, three, four, five. I guess they had two or three dogs, three dogs, right? And they don't believe in spay and neutering. I mean, spayed, right? Or neutered, whatever they only do for dogs, or spaying and neutering has to do with the sex. I should know, shouldn't I? But not really, because I haven't had to do that too often. So because the ones I got were already spayed and neutered, you know, rarely got one that needed it. And they don't believe in that, but what they would do is leave when they leave the dogs alone, put diapers on them. That's what they said. And I guess the What happened is the son was watching the dogs. The son wasn't was a little older. Maybe he was back from college watching the animals for the parents who were away, and he went outside for a cigarette. Didn't watch the dogs, and they went like just had a quick cigarette. Came back, the other dog. You know, they weren't brother and sister. None of the dogs were brother and sister. One impregnated the other. I guess the one that was golden, part of the golden lab, got the one that was mostly poodle, and they ended up having a litter. So that's the explanation. It's not, oh, you know, it's not a puppy. It's not a puppy mill because they have dogs that aren't. No, they weren't selling it. They weren't selling the dog. They just wanted to found a good home. And they knew it was going to be kind of like one of those situations where you're taking a dog not from a puppy mill, but being raised in a home where the animals get to be loved and all that stuff. It's even harder to grab that dog. Because when they're abandoned, when dogs are abandoned and pulled away from their mothers without being in a good environment, let's say in a puppy mill, they don't develop. They do develop. I'm sure they do develop parent child bonds, but not like they were being raised in a good home. So it makes it harder to separate because the dog had a relationship with another set of humans and had a relationship with its parents, both parents. I mean, we just made an Oliver Twist. Yeah, Apollo is Oliver Twist because he was, he wasn't Oliver, reverse Oliver Twist, I guess, where Oliver Twist was born to a wealthy home. And now he's being, I'm like Fagin, the one that ran the whole house full of boy thieves. Okay, I get it. I get it. They could be seen that way. I'm the horrible, or the hotelier in Les Mis, master of the house. Keep, I don't know the rest of that song. But yeah, I wanted to talk about the puppy. And now that we have the puppy, you know, there's no getting rid of it. Doesn't matter where it pee and poops. We just want to make sure. And finally, when we can get it trained, we can do that. I said, well, just say goodbye to our rug. We just get a new one. Don't be angry at the puppy. It has nothing to do with it until he's an adult. And then even then, it's no guarantee that it'll be that smart a dog. Hopefully it is. You know, I love a smart dog because I don't want the dog to do anything stupid like chase a car. That kind of stupid. That part. I don't want it to get hurt doing something stupid or eating something that it shouldn't be eating. And so now the commitment, and then we got the dog, and I had the restaurant opening. I was so tired because I'm getting up in the morning. I'm not getting to sleep. I can't really explain to my boss and say, listen, you're working me 12 hours a day isn't helping because we got a new puppy and I got to get up. I don't get any more than 5 hours sleep. And without 5 hours sleep, I start doing stupid stuff or more stupid than I normally do. And I'm not shitting on myself. I'm just saying the way it is. So I'm excited about it. We're going to have the dog now because the dog's so young. And if we're going to Poland in July, we're going to have to find a place for this guy to live. And that bothers me too. I hate leaving him behind. We won't be able to take the puppy to Poland until the earliest next year. So, yeah, I'm always thinking about that. Just make it, I got to, matter of fact, I got to take him out in a moment. Well, thank you for listening today. I'll be back in a moment. No, I will not be back in a moment. I said to my sister, and she was expecting, she said, maybe I can. Maybe I'll just do a three-part one today. I'll stop.